Thanks, Louise, and good afternoon, everyone. Isn't this a rather special day? I hadn't realised that we are not doing this virtually. It's just us. So we've got this wonderful opportunity to have an intimate time between us in terms of exploring this fantastic topic. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Joe Carenza. I'm a principal at ARUP. I also sit on the Australasian board and have over about 25 years of experience on delivering major projects, and with that have seen how major projects can be so incredibly influential in terms of developing precincts that are very much at the heart of our urban cities. I also lead the ARUP University component, which actually has foresight and research within it that uses those skills to, I guess, horizon scan and test future scenarios for helping to shape what those cities should look like and how our precincts respond to those challenges ahead of us. On behalf of ARUP, which is a leading firm, we are in design, we are passionate about our city's agenda, which sees us placed really well with regards to partnering with CEDA at today's discussion on growing the Western Corridor. As cities continue to grow and meet the challenges and opportunities inherent in increasing urbanisation, our futures are challenged with rethinking and reshaping the built environment to be sustainable, livable, and more connected. I'm sure here today we'll agree that this is a very important topic, and I thank CEDA for highlighting via today's event. So today I'd like to move on to now our Q&A portion. So we're going to spend probably about 20, 25 minutes exploring the topic through a number of questions that I'd like to put to the panel. You've already heard from Minister Allen and Louise Glanville. I would like to introduce Kate Rothy. Kate has extensive experience as a CEO, a senior executive and director within the commercial, government and non-for-profit sectors. Today, Kate joins us in her capacity as Director of Deals, Investment and Major Projects for the City of Wyndham. So welcome, Kate. So I'd like to get started. We're going to sit on these very comfortable couches and we'll try and navigate our way through a number of questions. While we do that, can I also encourage you to have a think about some of the questions you'd like to put to the panel, and I'll open it up to the floor in the next sort of 15, 20 minutes. So thank you. Okay. All right. There we go. I think we've got about the right social distancing. Okay. Can I also say, isn't it fantastic that we are one of the very few countries in the world that are able to do this? So I think a due note to the government in terms of being able to manage what we've now got here. So it's fantastic. I might start off, and this is a question for all of you, but Kate, I might ask you to start. I would like to hear from you first. So the first question is, how can an exciting pipeline of major projects that we've just heard about in Western Melbourne be translated into opportunities for employment, in business investment and better social outcomes for the local community?
Yeah, so I think, and hi everyone, we really can't see you up here because these lights are incredibly bright, so we're all going to be awake at 3 a.m. Still because we're overdosing on our sunlight, but thanks for your interest, and particularly coming out here to Wyndham. I'm sure it's a destination that not a lot of you come to that often, but you see as you drive down here how quickly and rapidly it's growing, and if you choose to try and drive down here, for example, at 3:30 onwards in the afternoon, you'll see just how much traffic there is moving down here. And the reason that traffic is moving to and from Wyndham at peak hour is because we don't have the jobs here that we need, so people have to transit back into the city. We have got, research tells us, the highest number of PhDs per capita in Point Cook, for example, and what that means is that there are people who are highly skilled professionals who choose to live in our municipality because it's very close. It's really the closest developable area left to the city centre that there is. So we're getting a lot of this skilled professional workforce coming out here, but of course we don't have the matching jobs out here, and what that means is you have to commute back to the city to work in particularly our hospitals, our research centres, and along of course Collins and Bourke Street, where we see a lot of that agglomerated legal accounting expertise in there. So that's one of the major difficulties that we've got at the moment, Joe, is finding the right sort of jobs for the people that live out here. Until we can get bigger job clusters of that type out here, we will continue to see people commute, and that's fine. And I know I've known Minister Allen for many years, and we've spoken a lot about road and rail and the importance of that. And I, in fact, chair the Metro Trains Advisory Board here in Melbourne and spend quite a bit of time in Hong Kong with their parent company. Road and rail is critical to helping us solve our problem of the massive spread that we have in terms of greater metropolitan Melbourne and the relatively small population. So if we went to Mexico, for example, we'd be getting 25 million people in the same space. So there's only so many job centres we can actually use that are really high density. So that connectivity is critical as we go about the process of actually spreading the job centres out. And we've seen through COVID very clearly that you do not need to be in an office 24/7 these days. You can work quite efficiently remotely. And in fact, I can't really see any reason why I couldn't work for a company based in Paris. We've just seen that we can do online work. So it's got to be a blend of road, rail connections and job centres that grow out here. And that goes to the livability thing, Joe, that you spoke about. When I was a CEO of Committee for Melbourne, we were very proud of the fact that we were the world's most livable city. And I will say that we lost that title after I left that role. But the reason we started to gradually lose it was because of this, you know, transport issue, really. It became just too difficult to move around. So it's critical that we start to join that up. I'm going to give a plug for roads here. And my very good friend Virginia Trioli and I often have this disagreement on ABC. There's too much focus on saying there should not be roads built. It should all be public transport. That is not going to solve our problem. And I say to Virginia, when was the last time you got your fridge delivered on the train, Virginia? So we've got to stop the conversation that says it has to all be public transport, because we need roads every bit as much as we need rail and trams. They're our heavy lifters. But not everyone lives on a train line, and we're very, very cognizant of that fact here in the West, because we have a very spread out community. It's very difficult to get to a train station. If you can get there, there's no parking, and we just don't have the bus services running properly at the moment to actually get you to your train station. And as well, roads are really built, and the Westgate Bridge was originally built for freight movement, and I think it's still, you probably know, Minister, I think it's still about 5% of gross domestic product travels over that one bridge every single year. That's national gross domestic product. So we've got to start thinking more about how we join road, rail and job centres up.
Ms. Rowland, do you want to add to that?
Is working? Yep. There's actually not a lot. I think Kate's covered it off really well. The only, and I agree, so it sounds like we've pre-caucused. I agree largely with a lot of what Kate has just has run through. The only couple of additional points I'd make is, and it kind of touches on what Louise said in her contribution around how you address some of those structural issues that we have to face. What we're doing at the moment in the transport area is we are trying to address the transport deficit. So the Western Roads upgrade, for example, was about addressing some of the deficit that the communities had grown well ahead of the road network. And I agree with Kate's sentiment. You've got to do both. You've got to do road, rail, active transport, freight connections. So a lot of that's what we're doing. So in terms of the connection between transport and jobs, it's about making sure we're addressing some of the structural deficit in terms of getting the better transport connections to where the jobs are at the moment, because again, people want to work closer to where they live. So we've got to make sure that that's an easy transport connection. But secondly, as we know, and this is particularly true for public transport, but there is also truth to it for larger road projects that particularly service freight. We know that having train stations give us some opportunities to contemplate the land use around those train stations. And Sunshine is the outstanding example of this in our current suite of projects, where having the Sunshine hub that will be the point through which all the airport trains come through, all the extra trains that will come through because of the Metro Tunnel project, the point where regional passengers will all connect in and out of the airport, and then the international movement of, when we do get back to international movements, in and out from the airport into Sunshine, that's 11 minutes away from the airport. That's a tremendous opportunity to contemplate the development, the marketing of that in terms of bringing business investment into those precincts around transport centres, and that's also true for what we're contemplating with the delivery of the suburban rail loop.
I think clearly I agree with all of that, but I also see a very big opportunity in really uplifting social procurement. Yeah. I think, I've been involved over my career in a lot of big tenders, and in all of them there are very good promises made at the point of the tendering process about what can be achieved in terms of this very issue, and that is not just diversity employment but local employment, where people are picking up jobs locally. And I think we need to be tougher on what we're requiring in terms of what we would see, not just wanting a commitment from organisations that tender for these very, very massive amounts of money to build, but that we want to know specifically how they are going to assist in getting the targets that we would have to employ people in the west of Melbourne in areas that are close to where they live. And I think that is a huge opportunity, and it's one, as a lawyer, as I've said, it's doable. We just have to be diligent and thorough with how we look at that, and I think it's really important. And the other thing I think that we've been talking about in the west, and Wamita has led this conversation a bit, but certainly VU as well with the partnership, has been to better connect employers with the job opportunities and to provide incentives. And I think the Minister was alluding to this around whether it's apprenticeships or whether it's passages into getting skilled and ready for jobs, because I think it's not much point having lots of jobs that are needed if we don't have the skills and education and the pathways in for people in the West to be able to access those. So probably quite practical things I'm thinking of with both of those, but ones I think that would make a big difference and would underpin some of this, the bigger picture, sort of clearly quite accurate comments about how we do it.
Can I follow up with we've touched on, I guess, what you would call an all of transport solution or issue, and that is, how do you go from home to station to workplace to, you know, how do you encourage an ability to either have, you know, local networks of, you know, whether they're, buses, electric vehicles, whatever it might be, encouraging people to leave the car at home to make it easier for that to happen, or car parking facilities. I might go to you, Louise, what's in your mind there? Are there things about an all of transport solution that we should be integrating and doing more of, particularly in the West with this?
Yes, I think the group of local governments that are part of the Western Partnership have come up with, they have many more hundreds of projects, but they have come up with sort of the top 50 things that would cause local level connectivity to the bigger picture. And it is a mix of better walking tracks, safe, well lit, good walking tracks. It is about cycling. It is about buses and some of that on-demand stuff. And it is essentially about how do you make sure that the local regional piece is connected up to the bigger transport picture. And I think that's very, once again, it's something that we should be testing and piloting. Yeah. I'm hopeful that we in the West will be able to do that, because we have some further work going on that accessible space with transport and trying to do the connecting up. And I think they're the sorts of things we've really got to look at. So it's both got to be small picture and bigger picture. I think you can't have one without the other, really.
Completely. It's that real integrated thinking that needs application.
Absolutely, yeah.
Kate, do you have any views on
so
that?
So you've hit the nail on the head. We actually don't have integrated thinking, and that's the problem. So I was talking to Mel Falkenberg, who's our head of transport at Wyndham. We were talking about on-demand bus services, and I said, have a look at Canberra. And I lived in Canberra for a long time. They have a bus service. They've just introduced a tram, one tram there, but they're getting more. But they have an excellent bus service because they have rapid transit between Civic and Belconnen and Tuggeranong and Woden, and you get on that and you go quickly en masse and you get there. And then the buses at the terminal at Tuggeranong, all 20 of them, take you on your little loop to get you home, and the buses at the terminal at Tuggeranong wait for the big bus to turn up so you can get on it. I catch my train home from the city, my bus the 407 bus has left because the 405 train is 5 minutes late.
Yeah.
And this is the problem that we have. We aren't thinking of the fact that I need to get home. The bus is thinking, yeah, I'm on a timetable, and the train is, you know, stuck because there's a, you know, we all share tracks in the system, and the train from Bendigo is running late, so we've got to wait for the crossover, and that means my train's now 5 minutes late, and the bus goes irrespective of whether or not the people are on it. That's just nonsensical. So these are the areas I think that we could actually integrate a lot better, yeah, in terms of having smaller loops. So there's a bus, I'm not sure, Minister, you probably know, does it still go from Frankston to Altona or something, you know, like, this is madness. It goes from Frankston to Altona, but they're old-fashioned, you know, they're old-fashioned two competing companies. One guy bought the other one out and they had these two smaller things, except we'll just make one big one. So we've got a lot of work that we can actually do in terms of just improving the integration, and that will help enormously. So people don't catch buses because the bus to my train station actually heads off from my place in the wrong direction. So I'm like, where is that? You know, where is that heading? So there is a lot more we can do, I think, to just, yeah, improve the systems. And I know, Minister, that we, you know, there's been a lot of talks about how contracts and different, you know, things can change that system. They're not easy to do, but, you know, there are already systems in place that could be a lot better, I think.
Yeah. I might jump on to a COVID question, if you don't mind. Minister Allen, this is for you. Last year saw us change the way we work, the way we commute, what we can do at home, what we do at work, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think the future of work is something that's clearly definable at the moment. We're still exploring what that might look like. What does that do to our planning with regards to significant transport projects, significant projects that you've just run through that are fundamental to shaping our city whilst we've got a changing environment? How do you balance the two?
I think you're right. I think, and you could probably argue, it's always hard to predict the future of work with, particularly in more recent times, the technological change. But I think one of the things, obviously, COVID did was it totally busted the myth that you couldn't work productively remotely. And you know, I hope I'm not offending any technology providers in the room, but I think we're pleasantly surprised that we were able to reasonably seamlessly transition to being to whatever platform you were on, connect in, and I live on the outskirts of Bendigo, so I was very pleasantly surprised that my system held up and enabled me to work from home. So I think that has shown us a new pathway to that issue that has confronted particularly women for decades about how you balance the caring and work responsibilities. And I know more and more there are more and more men who want to be part, who are also on this journey and want to be part of the caring responsibilities. And I deliberately say caring because it's not just littlies. Many people have older family members or perhaps a neighbour or a loved one that they have responsibilities for. And so it really has busted open those opportunities. And I think for many of us, we want to hold on to those opportunities about being able to have a couple of days at home, be able to drop the kids to school. I dropped my own kids to school this morning, which was, you know, something I haven't been able to routinely do before COVID. So I think what the challenge then in terms of bringing that back to a transport outlook is we've got a little bit of a head start because the policy setting we've had in Victoria for a little while now is the 20-minute neighbourhood. And we've talked about it at a conceptual level, and a lot of planners and local government planners have discussed this at a conceptual level. But what we've been able to do now, because people are working from home, it is requiring us to think about the active transport connections to the neighbourhood shops rather than the arterial connection into the city on the road network, because we are seeing quite a lot of demand on our local road network. It's also, too, brought into, I mean, in some ways it's serendipitous, like the planning we were already doing on the suburban rail loop. Admittedly, this is a project that's still got quite a few years yet to get through the delivery stage. But again, that is about putting rail connections into parts of the middle ring of Melbourne, the orbital rail loop all the way from Frankston to Werribee. And yes, Kate, not everyone may want to do that journey, but it is about giving more options. And that's what we're really focused on in public transport is giving people the options to be able to connect to where they want to go via public transport. And so the Suburban Rail Loop will create these transport nodes. They will be in places that will, you know, whether it's Monash University, where there's long talked about connecting a rail line, connecting in through the airport, and being able to give people more choice about where they travel, but also being able to then create the job centres around those important transport precincts.
Yeah. Does anyone else want to contribute to that one? Or no? I might want to touch on sustainability, actually. It's a really significant planning piece around ensuring that our precincts and our cities develop in a way that are not only sustainable but actually are flexible enough to deal with changing technologies, to deal with new usage patterns with regards to energy or systems of transport, etc. How do we ensure that in our planning we're creating and flourishing those environmental sustainable principles within Western Melbourne? What should we be doing more of or less of or maybe introduce? Kate, can I start with you?
Yeah, so one of the huge advantages we have out here is it's greenfield. And so it means you don't have to retrofit or you don't have to go back and pull everything out to put new things in. And again, you know, I must move back to Canberra because I'm going to give it another plug today. But when I lived there, the Transact came through and they took all of the overhead power lines and cabling and they put it all underground. So you don't drive around Canberra and see overhead power lines and things. They did that en masse at once. And if you go to somewhere like, many of you will be aware of the 1160 Sayers Road development, our A-League development out there, that's a greenfield site. It is in fact a ploughed paddock at the moment. And thanks very much to our state government and our Minister for Planning, we've got a special planning over there. But the aim of that is to build our own stadium, sports stadium out there, which is important for the West because it gives a lot of people a sense of cultural identity and a pride. There's a massive pride that we could win, you know, an A-League licence when nobody, let's be honest, rated us a chance at all. We could do that, and not only that, but we can build our own stadium using this innovative value capture model. And why are we doing that? And Tim Pallas is our member for Werribee, our treasurer. And he said, you know, what do you want from me? And I said, nothing. We will build our own stadium, Tim. And but we picked that site because there's a train station already slated to go in there. I said, you build the train station for us. That's because there isn't enough state government or federal government money to do everything. I said, Tim, we need schools and hospitals and things like that. So we'll work out how to build sporting infrastructure. You do your bit. But the ideal opportunity for us out there, and we're starting now to talk to big groups who are really interested in the smart city concept. How do we put all of our stuff underground? They're really interested in the 5G connectivity and how do we actually do away with landlines and things like that? How do we actually go into the 5G situation? How do we actually stop the rubbish bin use? And I went to Barcelona to the Smart Cities Conference, and in Finland they have chutes. You know, the whole apartment block, you just put your rubbish down the recycle chute or down the green waste chute or down the glass chute. It goes to one big hopper in the basement, and then once a day a truck comes and picks the big skip up and takes it away and puts a new one there. So you've then got one repository for all your rubbish, not a heap of bins out on the street. And like I say, Greenfield allows you these opportunities to look at these different initiatives, which is very, very much more difficult to go and retrofit well-established suburbs. So we're certainly looking at them. There's always a cost element to it. So quite often being innovative and creative in this space does cost initially. So we're trying to work out ways to do that. But we're certainly looking at how we can do it out here in greenfield development in particular.
Louise, do you have any views?
Just a few. I mean, I do think that the creation of Greater Western Water is a really important thing for the west of Melbourne. I can't speak as eloquently about it as Marie could as the new CEO, but to me, what this offers is a real opportunity, not only in terms of sustainability in water usage, in terms of how we conceptualise need across different areas, rather than just thinking about specific areas, but think about the total and the whole and the parts of that and how they should differ. I think it's also in terms of sustainability, we shouldn't forget greening. A good fact about that tells you something about the deficit in the West is that we have nowhere near as many canopy levels as exist in other parts of Melbourne. And that's a problem. Why? Well, it's a problem for the quality of our air, it's a problem for where our children play, it's a problem for where people as they're getting older might like to walk and sit, it's a problem for how workers interact with local areas when they want a bit of time out. But all of these things, I think, add to broader sustainability. So there is, of course, the ICT points and the great usage, I think, of some of the new developments that the Minister has announced. How do we showcase what can be done in terms of sustainable activity and outcomes, but also these bigger picture questions of sustainability that do relate to things like water and greening and the environment in which we live and work.
Particularly important for precincts as well. Activation of precincts in really beautiful green spaces is really fundamental. Yep. I might just pause and open it up to the audience. If there are any questions that... Sorry, we've got these shining lights. It's really hard to see out there. Got a question down here?
Oh, it's shocking. I can't even look
up. Just wait for the microphone, yeah. If you could just let us know name and where you're from. And then
Josh Gilligan, a councillor at Wyndham City. It's been a really interesting conversation about the blend of the ability of individuals in the western suburbs to get to and from their homes, whether it be entertainment or for work, into the Melbourne CBD. And I don't think there's any doubt that the state government has done an exceptional job at addressing that issue, not just now, but into the future. There is a glaring gap, though, and it's really around decentralisation of jobs, and that's been part of the panel's conversation, sort of nuanced in this problem. So my question turns to a Wyndham-centric issue that we're facing. We've got the East Werribee Employment Precinct, the only precinct that's had no real announced pathway plan since the termination of the Australian Education City bid, and there was for a period of time the minister, I believe, was part of that project a couple of years ago. My question is, where did we go wrong in terms of not having any upstart or development or commitment around the precinct, and what can we do to generate the sort of activity that's needed, as Kate Roffey mentioned, creating that job aspect that deals with that gap, that final gap that we've got in the West, noting there are various departmental reports all talking about the urgency of looking at this site. Thank you.
Who'd like to tackle that one?
Well, I'm happy to start, if you want to.
Go ahead, Louise.
Look, I think it's a really interesting question. It takes a lot of leadership and boldness to deliver on what I would call real regional presences in various parts of the West, and to make them succeed. I mean, if you look back on the West history, Melton was supposed to be a massive regional centre for the West. That was always what was intended. Never happened for a whole range of reasons. And I think this is a good example of the ideas there. How do you actually breathe quite a bit of life into it to make it happen? I think, taking my union hat off here, but that it is really important for governments to think about where they house workers. And I know VLA is not a big organisation, 1,000 people, but we know they can work out in other places because they've done it for the past year. And we know that there are certain parts of regional Melbourne, including the West, where we would be well placed to staff up more, or to move staff from the centre out. So I think there has to be very deliberative steps in that way to think about where do people access services, and the proper planning for understanding demand and pipeline effects, and therefore where should those resources be. So that's one thing. I also think that in the West, what's great about it is that each of the, say, local government areas, and I know your question's about Wyndham, but I'll leave others to answer that, in each of the local government areas, and having lived in about three or four of them across my lifetime, there is unique things that we could showcase that would actually draw people there, that would create communities, and I think that's another part of it. And, you know, there's natural beauty in some areas, there's exciting ways of living in some areas. I think of that in Footscray, for example. And, you know, I just think that there's possibilities around creating much stronger regional centres, whether they be big and recognised or niche in some way, that showcase the best of the West and actually drive people out to other locations, both to live and to work.
Can I just add, I think this is a really, this is a critical conversation for us to have, because I don't think this is a state government or a federal government issue. And it's about public-private partnerships, and it's, you know, it's about something that we're doing, for example, with the value capture at the A-League. And I often speak about this when I talk about public-private partnerships or everyone wanting commercial sector to be more engaged in delivery of infrastructure or job centres or things. There's two things that have to happen. One, I get so many developers come to me, because I'm the Director of Deals, Investments and Major Projects, have I got a great deal for you? And they give it to me and I said, no, that's a great deal for you. There is nothing in that for my community. And I'm not going to be able to go and sell it to my councillors because that's all upside for you. But then when, on the other hand, when it's government, they say, well, they can't make a profit over there because that's not allowed. Well, why are they going to get involved in it if the private sector cannot make a profit? So we need to bridge this massive gap out here, which says commercial providers, there are great deals for you. You know, this A-League deal is unique and it's difficult, and I'm still, you know, we're still banging away at commercial negotiations 4 years on, but we will get there. As I tell Tim Pallas every time I see him, yes, I will deliver it for you, Tim. We will get there because they believe this is good for them and it's good for the community. You know, these guys that I'm working with are passionate about football, passionate about soccer. They want to do this because they see it's going to make such a big difference. My councillors can see that it's okay for that group to make a profit. They are a business venture. If, you know, they cannot do it for free. So we have to get, I think, a lot closer in this space if we're going to actually deliver on big things like East Werribee and other areas. And that is not Minister Allen's fault. That's your fault, because you're the people who vote. And every time the government's tried to do a deal with government-owned land, we all say, oh, why should we give that away? Why should we allow the private sector to do something? So I think we have to have much more adult conversations on both sides in this space if we're going to get anywhere, because PPPs and investment from the private sector and commercial sector is critical. It is the way we're going to accelerate our infrastructure build. But governments cannot do it if everyone sits there and says, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to make a profit if they're a commercial provider, because, you know, you cannot govern from opposition. You know, that's the thing. So in the end, if it's just too unpopular, you just cannot do it as a government. And that is not the minister's fault. That's not the government's fault. That's about us as people who work in this sector being a lot more cognizant of actually what we're talking about when we have these conversations.
I've got to go to you.
I might take Kate to some of my rallies under some pressure. No, look, I think it's a little challenging to reflect on the history of East Werribee, because there were some quite fraught issues that went in around that proposal, and that was also tied up in some legal issues as well. But I think one of the two observations I'd make is, one, I think there remains to be a transport constraint around and a solution around that site, and the Treasurer's had a good run today. He and I have been talking about that. But again, it needs, I think, reflecting on what Kate has said, it does need a bit of a shared view on what's the outcome we want. Government, state government can come along and say, we want X, Y and Z on that site. A private developer can say, we want X, Y and Z, but it has to be a shared outcome, because A, to have the broader support, but also for it to work. And then just finally, I'm a big fan of decentralisation of both government services, but services more generally into both the suburbs and the regions, because again, it's about that equality of outcome. If people can get to what they need, and if that what is a job or a doctor's appointment or a TAFE education, closer to where they live. And that's why I've always been very supportive of decentralisation, and it's why, even though it's not seen purely through that prism of decentralisation, big investments in hospitals in Sunshine and Footscray, and in Werribee, and in court precincts, or are a part of that decentralisation, because it is about providing those public services. They may not be necessarily public servant jobs, but they are public services into those communities.
There's a couple of hands, just one over there.
That's Western United, everyone, not Melbourne Football Club, as we spoke about before, but happy to plug either.
He's talking about Western Football Club. Thanks, Wade. And so, look, you're right, and I appreciate your acknowledgement of the heavy lifting that we've done, not just in the transport space, but in some of those other key service deliveries like health and education as well. Look, we are. I'm not directly the minister responsible for the city deals. That actually does also rest with the treasurer as well. But it is something that the federal minister who's got responsibility for this, Paul Fletcher, and I talk about a lot, about how do we take the next steps. Obviously, the federal government are keen, but we're really yet to get a sense of what does that keenness translate into beyond some further articulation around the existing shared commitments. Again, in my space, it's in airport rail and in Geelong fast rail. So it's been moving obviously far more slowly than what probably people like yourself and others in the community would like to see. But without kind of having a sense of, well, what do they want to bring to the table? Like, we've got... and I'm sure, like local government, all of us got a list a mile long of things that if we had a dance partner and they want to progress some of them, we could do a lot. Now, I don't want that to be necessarily read down as a negative, because we have been having a whole bunch of pretty good conversations with the Commonwealth, most particularly around those projects and also some other activities. And, you know, we've also, areas like understanding the potential of Sunshine off the back of the airport rail project. So we're having those conversations. They're yet to kind of go to the next stage, but I suppose it's fair to say there's nothing like an election cycle to sharpen the focus, and we're heading into that season pretty soon.
One more question, just down here.
So I've got the microphone, hello. Livia Bonazzi, Western Water, which is the other part of the Greater Western Water.
Yeah.
But my question is not about water, it's more generic about... we are undertaking clearly, we are at a record high in investment in infrastructure. And I'm just interested in understanding how the conversation is going within government, because we have a perfect opportunity to retain some of the works, remote workers in our region, so they don't have to travel into the city. But there seems to be a preferencing of the commercial viability of cafes and businesses in the CBD. But we have an opportunity post-COVID to retain some of the workforce which is distributed to achieve the 20-minute suburb or neighbourhood a bit quicker. And although I do agree with upgrading and extending the road network, Kate, I am aware that fridges can be delivered on dirt roads in remote houses. And so, you know, we have an opportunity to progress the conversation. I'm really interested to see how we can leverage the opportunity that has been given to us by the COVID experience to really invest in the local economic development.
That was partly, there was a question about what the role of the government is doing. We've been, from essentially the beginning of the pandemic, when we were all very quickly locked up in and at working from home, thinking about what this means for, going back to that earlier question about the future of the Victorian public sector workforce. And like many of the private sector companies, our workforce surveys tell us that people do want to continue to work something like 2 to 3 days at home, 2 to 3 days a week from home, if they can be given that opportunity, which in turn has led us to think about, well, what does that look like? Because there are clearly a bunch of issues around making sure people, if they're working from home, are well supported in that home environment as a worker, and that their health and wellbeing is taken good care of. We've been also having a look at what some kind of suburban office locations might look like, and there's been some thinking about, well, what if, going back to the question about decentralisation, what if there was some space where we could set up some of those, I suppose, hot desking type arrangements that work pretty well, where we can have people who maybe don't want to come all the way into the city. And it's understandable why. You do want to limit your... If you have to commute 5 days a week from, you know, as far away as Wyndham Vale or wherever, it's a long, long day. If you can take that back to 2 to 3 days, what does it look like to be able to provide some public sector opportunities closer to where you live? And so that's a piece of work that we're doing. But it's also, I think it's really interesting to be having this conversation in this room, whereas going back to Kate's old role, if this was an event hosted by the Committee for Melbourne, they'd be saying, bring everyone back. So it's a challenge, and it's going to continue to wash through in terms of how I think really people will lead this. People will lead their employers to in terms of how those decisions are shaped, because if I think that flexibility that's come into the workplace now, which is long being desired and people will want to cherish, will really dictate where people will take their labour in terms of who they work for and who could offer the most flexible solutions.
It's a really interesting, because you did mention Committee for Melbourne, and not so much that, but Sally Capp, who I know well, the Lord Mayor of the City of Melbourne. So the City of Melbourne now is struggling with that local economy. Restaurants, cafes, coffee shops are struggling because people aren't going into the city, and that's creating a huge economic burden for Victoria, not just for the City of Melbourne. And we did talk, and we spoke about this, you know, with young people and jobs. I worked with Tennis Australia and Grand Prix events like that, big international tourism events, create a lot of work opportunities for our university students who are studying, and they work part-time, and a lot of them work in the casual sector. That is dead. That is absolutely dead and buried at the moment, because we're not having those big major events. So there's this whole new world to play out. Yet what happens to the city centre, because we don't have to travel in there all the time. So the local economy within the city centre is struggling. The more we work from home, even if we had a job centre here in Werribee, if we're all working from home, we're still not at the local coffee shop down on Watton Street. So it's, you know, there is a massive impact that COVID has had. It's taught us a whole new way to work and to live, and new opportunities. And we're finding in particular young people, young workers who are starting in their early phase of the career, are really missing out not being in office-based situations, because they're not doing the unconscious learning. They're not having the opportunity to sit in meetings with senior staff and learn how to conduct themselves. They're not learning the tacit negotiation skills, because they're not having these opportunities. And that is, I think, going to tell in a couple of years' time, as that next tranche comes through into senior positions. They haven't learned that, you know, intangible quality that you learn from, you know, having the opportunity to sit and talk to, you know, Jacinta and people like that, where I learn, pick up so much stuff from sitting around freight advisory councils and task force and things. So there is a lot left to play out in this space, and I don't think we should be fooled that decentralisation of all jobs or working from home is going to solve the problem, because while I'm working from home, I'm still in my pyjamas. I'm not going out and getting a coffee or having lunch or those sorts of things. So there's a lot left to play out in this space.
I'm very conscious of time, and I've got to say there are things that are really critical in terms of development of younger staff in particular, younger people, collaboration, knowledge exchange is really important, and so I think there's a long way to go in terms of how we connect as a community. I've got to say a huge thank you to Louise, Minister Allen and Kate. This has been a fantastic opportunity to have a great discussion, which feels as though it's been cut short a little bit because we've run out of time, so apologies for that. But I do see Melinda just behind me, so my thanks to you for your participation.
Yes, lurking with intent, Joe. what a fantastic conversation. We started off with a really fantastic sort of summary of all of the amazing transport infrastructure investments that are being made and how critical are they, not just in terms of, supporting our economic recovery, but thinking about, in driving our thinking about how we reimagine economic opportunity and activity. I was really pleased to hear too that, Louise, you spoke to the issue of structural disadvantage. It's something that we at CEDA have looked at before, and the phrase postcode inequality is a really relevant one, and it's really, really critical. The issues that we've been talking about today around looking at place and thinking about how you address all of these issues in a holistic way, and bring, built physical infrastructure and social infrastructure together in a way to create prosperity for everyone, and look at the opportunities, particularly for those who've been excluded in the past, is really critical and goes right to the heart of what really excites us at CEDA. The conversation we just finished off with then, I just think, is also so important. I think following this tremendously challenging last 12 months, we've learned a lot about ourselves and we've learned a lot about what we're capable of. I think it's interesting, though, that people, from my perspective, there's a tendency to sort of jump to a conclusion and say, well, we've shown ourselves that we can do that. I'm a little bit of a believer in mean reversion, and I've used this analogy of the sort of the New Year's resolution. The New Year's resolutions that stick because people actually look at what's doable and they take one step at a time and one step at a time and they really commit to it. And I think that's what we have to do with what we've learned through COVID. CBDs were the source of almost every net job created prior to COVID, and we were struggling with that. That was where the conversation around decentralisation was. That's where all the activity was. That's because that agglomeration effect is really important. Getting people together, we like that. So as we think about precincts like that, I think like this here, I think we need to think about how we create that in other locations, but then how we connect to each other, so that it's not an either-or, which I think is the point that Kate was making so clearly towards the end. But I think if we don't really hold on to and try to cultivate what we've learned through COVID, 12 months from now we're going to look back and wish that we had. So I think that's the challenge for all of us as we imagine these, perhaps to coin the phrase again, the greenfield opportunity, and I think that's how we have to think about the next 12 months. We could have gone on for ages. I've got the poll questions here. Of course, my phone's just closed itself. The poll results, so we asked what the audience thought was the most important focus. 10% said proximity to jobs, so jobs where residents live, was the most important focus for developing the Western Melbourne region. 25% said a robust and active transport network, and I'm going to call out active in terms of walking and riding, as well as public transport and other transport. And then 32% each for livability and greening of the suburbs, and also health and education. So I think what that tells you is that we need, the room's telling us this is really genuinely an all-in holistic agenda. If you answered the poll, there's scope for leaving comments. So if we didn't put the answer in that poll that you think is really important, feel free to put a comment in there. Or, I'm going to go old school, If you think there's something else that we should be addressing, you can use your name tag, pull it out of its plastic sleeve and write a question and give it to one of the team, and we'll see if we can follow up in another conversation with a blog or a podcast, which is something that we're doing more of at CEDA, because we're really keen to continue this conversation. Can I add my thanks to those of Joe? First to you, Joe. Thank you for a great facilitation. Kate, Jacinta and Louise, thank you so much for an incredible conversation. To our sponsors, Arup and Wyndham City Council, thank you again. And then finally, I said at the outset that CEDA's purpose is about positively shaping social and economic development. The team and I are really passionate about that purpose. We've made some changes in the organisation over the last 12 months. We're doing things differently. We're building up a pipeline of more activity in different areas and across a wider range of activities. So if you'd like to find out more about that, check out the website, ceda.com.au, and let us know how you think we can have more impact. And then just the last little thing, the Treasurer's got a fantastic plug today, so let me finish with a plug for him and us. We do, of course, have him on the stage on the 21st of May. He'll be talking about the recently released Victorian budget. So if you didn't get enough of him today, indirectly, come and get something directly from him on the 21st of May. Thank you again, everyone.